This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Oru Kayak. They design folding kayaks that can go virtually anywhere, thanks to their lightweight and folding design. Stay tuned for later in the episode. We'll talk to Johnny Gall, founder of Dirtbag Darling, about how the Oru Kayak helps her escape the crowds. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores. A couple of announcements before I kick off this episode. First, you might have been surprised to see this episode in your queue today. This year, I've been releasing an episode every 2 weeks, but thanks to the support of Oru Kayak, the sponsor you hear at the beginning and the middle of every episode, I'm able to start making this weekly, which is a really big deal to me because there are so many of your stories that I want to tell. Needless to say, I'm really excited about this. Second, I wanted to share an extension of The Outside Magazine's women's issue. The Outside podcast brings Outside Magazine's tradition of literary storytelling into the audio world. Their new series, Double X Factor, has best-selling author Florence Williams, who is also on the She Explores podcast, profiling extraordinary women in the outdoors. Women like soccer legend and gender equality activist Abby Wambach, record-setting distance swimmer Diana Nyad, and big wall climber Beth Rodden. They'll also be investigating topics like the surprising history of the sports bra. Find the show at outsideonline.com/podcast, on iTunes, or anywhere podcasts are found. It's really cool to see Outside covering more women's content. Okay, on with the show.
This idea of just showing up wherever it is and whatever it is, I think it's so important to show up, because there's been so many times where I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this, or like, maybe I'll postpone it. For me, the podcast was just in faith saying like, hey, I am going to have confidence and share what's on my mind and heart, and hope that in some humble way it might encourage someone else. And that's all I can hope for. If I can encourage one person from this conversation, it'll be a gift to me.
This is Haley Robeson, the CEO of Kamek, an outdoor gear company whose mission essentially is to get more people outside by making hammocks and really beautiful sleep systems. Haley is all about showing up. It is the string that ran through the 90 minutes we talked. And you know how she said that she hoped she'd reach just one person through our conversation? Well, that, at a minimum, was me. I was in a funk, and I was feeling less than confident about my place in the world. Haley's talk about showing up turned that feeling inside out for me. I have a feeling that she'll reach you, too. You might not have a step-by-step guide to becoming a CEO by listening to this episode, but I think you might come close. Haley has fantastic advice about how to reach out when you're looking to make new connections in an industry, and transferring all the experience that you've had in different aspects of your life into your work life. What keeps you from showing up when you have those feelings of not wanting to do something? Like, what precipitates that feeling?
A lot of it's probably rooted in insecurity or fear. Sometimes you have something to risk, right? Whether it's reputation or feeling uncomfortable. It's things we realize in those moments that we're giving undue value in our lives. And it's a mental battle at that point. And you just have to say, like, I'm going to choose confidence in this moment, even if I don't feel it. And I'm not going to like let these feelings win. Or this might result in failure. I think if we don't allow ourselves to accept failure, or if we listen too much to our insecurities and we try to build protective bubbles around ourselves, we miss out on some of the greatest experiences of life. It can be a mental battle, and I think we have to assert ourselves sometimes in order to win, or put action before feeling, which is, I think, what showing up is, right? It's, I don't know if I'm supposed to be here, or how this is going to work out, or how it might make me feel, but there's a small voice in me that thinks this could work out, so I'm going to show up in spite of myself. And great things happen. I think I've just tried to do things that stretch my comfort zone because there's a little bit of me that's interested. And if I let the part of me that wants to always protect how I look and what people think of me win, I think I'd have like a less full life and I would miss out on so much.
Another concept that Haley brings up is this notion of type 1 and type 2 fun. It comes up more than once in our conversation, so I'm going to let Haley define it for us.
In the vein of memory, there's several psychologists that I've been reading recently talk about type 1 and type 2 fun, and Travis on our team has always shared it with us, is like, you want to live your life on the edge of type 2 fun. So type 1 fun is instant gratification, cannonballing into a lake or sitting out on your porch with a beer on a Saturday. And I think a lot of really wonderful parts of life can be in type 1 fun, right? We need to have type 1 fun. But type 2 fun is the kind of fun where in the moment, you're not entirely comfortable or enjoying yourself. Yet in hindsight, wow, that was so fun. When we're on the edge of our comfort zones, that's where we experience growth. And that's also where we create the strongest memories because our brain is firing and making so many more connections in that moment because we're engaged physically and mentally and emotionally. And so we're making more concrete memories.
That makes a lot of sense, right? Hold on to that thought and mull over how type 2 fun defines you. Where did you grow up and what was your entry point to the outdoors?
I was born in Bedford, Texas. I consider myself very Texan at heart and by heritage. I come from many generations of Texans. But I moved away to Virginia when I was 3 years old. My entry point to the outdoors was probably playing in a kiddie pool in our backyard. I grew up in the post-colonial center outside of Richmond. We didn't have fences. We lived in this incredible neighborhood and there were kids everywhere. And we had this ditch system that ran between our houses. And it's funny when you go back, you're like, oh man, that's just a tiny cement ditch, but there were tadpoles. I spent a lot of time playing outside and I spent a lot of time playing in what, you know, they now call unstructured play, where we would just roam free and with other kids make up our own games and plant gardens and play basketball and have chalk on the driveway and lemonade stands. And so I'm such a believer in the power of play and I'm so grateful for my childhood.
Haley moved back to Texas at age 13 and went to business school for undergrad there. It was at 19 that she had her first true camping experience.
I think I was 19 and I'd met a girl studying abroad in Spain who was in nursing school at the University of Texas and I was in the business school. And we met and decided that we wanted to have an adventure. And she had grown up going to Camp Chile in Colorado and camping outside. And I didn't really have that experience, but I wanted to taste it. And we decided that we would drive from Dallas to Utah 17 hours straight and we would spend a week out of my mom's Chrysler minivan, experiencing the great outdoors of Utah. And I will never forget this one. I think it was 48-hour period where we backpacked. It was my first time that I remember carrying a backpack and camping overnight. We were in Canyonlands National Park in this section called Elephant Park. And it just felt like the most epic 24 hours. There was a dust storm. We got back to my mom's car and it was covered in 2 inches of dust. And I remember we cooked this cold fajita dinner because the wind was blowing so hard we couldn't get our camp stove to light. But Megan whipped out a pocket knife and was cutting a bell pepper with it. And I remember thinking she was the coolest girl I'd ever met. Just this visual image of us being on this big red rock with a bell pepper and a pocket knife and feeling this sense of discovery and exploration and feeling really challenged. Like I remember not sleeping that well my first night camping just because it was all so new. But like the type 2 fun we talked about earlier, I think I returned to that moment as really when it was all over, feeling a greater sense of agency and confidence. I felt empowered. And the life change that can happen through outdoor experience is so palpable. And I've now in my early 30s, over the past plus decade, have seen that manifest in so many different relationships and individuals. And I'm such a believer in the power of experience, especially outdoor experience, to be such a catalyst for change in people's lives.
After college in Texas, Haley went to work at Bain as a consultant. Through that work, Haley was surprised to reconnect with the outdoor world, and this sparked a change in her life.
I believe in 2009, I moved to San Francisco for 6 months, and I worked at an organization called Summer Search. It's a national organization that works in urban communities across the U.S. to provide leadership and experiential learning opportunities for youth in at-risk, underserved communities. And through that work, I got to interview over 30 organizations in the U.S. that provide experiential learning, most of them through outdoor engagement. And that really lit the bug for me. I didn't know quite what it would look like if it was nonprofit management or education or business, but I wanted to be a part of that in some capacity. And so I was working at Bain, and I quit in 2010, and I moved to Wyoming to do a 90-day outdoor leader training course with Knowles. And the first time after that that I was a field instructor was the summer of 2012, when I went to Wyoming and worked for an organization called Solid Rock Outdoor Ministry. It's like Knowles, but has a ministry component to it. So I led 21-day backpacking courses in the winds that were comprised of 8 days of climbing and then 12 nights of backpacking. And I will never forget that summer. I was humbled by 15 and 16-year-old girls more than I've ever been humbled. And there is so much joy and resiliency and just being in the wilderness, us 10 women, and coming in. I have this picture of all 8 girls on day 1, and they'd flown in from all over the country. And some of them are in short shorts and have full makeup on, and others are in braces. And it was just such a unique group of girls that all had such different stories. And we came out 21 days later, like this little pack, singing Lord of the Rings theme songs as we exited the wilderness, and everyone covered in dirt and filled with stories. And that likeness and that kinship of wilderness being in some ways an equalizer, and these girls having time apart from societal pressures and to just have freedom of expression. It's one of my favorite things I've ever done.
And from that summer, did you go to get your MBA at Stanford?
I did. So I went from living out of my car for the summer and being in tents with 16-year-olds to grad school at Stanford, which was quite a culture shock. Some of my classmates had just finished up investment banking or private equity in New York and had this sense of freedom and wanted to party. And I was used to going to bed at 9 p.m. I did a joint degree in business and education, and I spent a lot of time at Stanford in the design school, which is a multidisciplinary center that brings together people to problem solve. But I was really interested in design and education, specifically experiential education. And from my work and career experiences prior to grad school, I was really intrigued by the concept of transference. How do we as people and teachers or mentors or coaches help translate what somebody's learned in one context or learning environment to the next? Because we can't live our lives in the backcountry. I mean, most people don't. Some people do. And the backcountry and the wilderness and the wild places are where we learn so much about ourselves. And our environment requires temporary changes from us, but then we are creatures that can assimilate so quickly back to our environments. And sometimes we forget what we know, and we forget the tools that we've learned that can help us lead better lives. And so how can we as educators help youth transfer what they've learned in one environment to the next?
Why did you choose to concentrate on both business and education?
So I had business background. I was really fascinated by education, but didn't think I wanted to go entirely into the education space. And so might there be a way to combine the two, knowing that the latest research, Gale, shows that many of us will have up to 20 jobs in our lifetime and as many as 4 career changes, which is just crazy, right? And so I think that can be so freeing for people at any stage in life to say, hey, there's something on the horizon for me.
Were you one of those people who had a sense of like what you wanted to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be just like Mariah Carey, but I have a terrible singing voice. I also wanted to have a vegetable garden and an orphanage. Like I always imagined having a lot of people in my home, creating a place of welcome. But I remember when I was like 14 or something, I think I told my dad, like, I want to help companies be better, which is so silly because I think that's what my dad was, a businessman. So I think I just like kind of saw that, maybe emulated it. But then I ended up being a consultant, which was like a feeble attempt at doing that. But I think there's this sense of like that what we be is like automatically a vocation or a job. And I think what we want to be is so much more than that. It's not the what we do, but it's the who we are and why we do what we do. And I wouldn't have articulated that as a kid, but I think that's something, yes, sure, I have titles and past experiences and degrees, but those things are all like the what. And I think ultimately what matters is who we're becoming while we're doing the like what we do thing, and the why. Like the how and the why matter infinitely more than the what.
I agree. And there is something really comforting in that statistic that you brought up about the number of jobs and the number of careers that people have in their lives, because that goes against what we're sometimes taught as we get older.
I asked Haley what she thinks about the icebreaker question. What do you do?
You can tell so much about a society and a culture by their leading questions, right? We live in a moment where a lot of people are looking for identity in their job. And I don't think that that is inherently a bad thing, but I think it's problematic because it's not possible. We can find fulfillment in our work. We can find satisfaction. We can find peers and colleagues and challenge. I mean, there's so much in a job, but ultimately our jobs aren't our identity. Maybe an outworking of an aspect of our identities. But I think so many people are looking for a job to define them because that question is how we are defining others. And so my hope is that if we're truly in desire in a relationship, a better question may be like, tell me where you're from. Where did you grow up? That is a question that helps you get to know somebody. It gets to help you empathize with maybe their point of view or where they're coming from. But my job may change entirely out of circumstance. If I find too much of my identity in being the CEO of Kamek, like I am only set up for disappointment because this too will go away. Kamek, I mean, my hope is that we are wildly successful, but we're a startup. This is fragile. We could fail, and every single person at this company is still going to be the entirety of who they are, even if they don't work at Kamek. And so we can't hang our hats on the answer to that question.
It's a point of reference. We're all programmed to create these little frameworks for people just by glancing at them, even in our brains. So it's an easy way to kind of put someone in a box. And I think a box is the worst place to put people.
Okay, yes. Take this back outside the box, quite literally. How cool if you get a group of people outside, like my Knowles course, for example. We could not have had more different answers to the what do you do question. All 13 of us were this broad swath of humanity. And yet we problem solved and forged community together over 90 days. And I found love and kinship and tension and all of these things across this group of people who had wildly different answers to that question.
Did you think when you were in grad school that you were working towards heading up a company?
No, no, I did not know what I, okay, this is, I tell everybody, like, you need to know why you're going to grad school.
I find out how Haley became a CEO, and I also ask Haley for advice on how to break into the outdoor industry after a quick word from our sponsor, Oru Kayak. The folks at Oru Kayak believe that connecting to nature is a deep human need, even for those of us who live in cities.
We went to Glacier National Park over the summer.
We talked to Johnny Gall, the founder of Dirtbag Darling, about where she takes her Oru kayak in the wild.
and it was peak tourist season, and it was also during the 100th anniversary of the Park Service, so it was just incredibly crowded. And we were getting really discouraged because all of the hiking trails looked more like conga lines of people than hiking trails. We were sitting in the parking lot just feeling kind of down, and we decided to load up the Oru kayaks in the backpacks and hike back to Hidden Lake, which is probably the most iconic spot in that park. But it's also a 6-mile hike, which isn't easy, but we did it. And because of that, we had Hidden Lake all to ourselves for the entire day, which was just, it was magical. And we paddled back to this amphitheater formation that no trail goes to. And there were probably 50 waterfalls coming down, and it was just otherworldly. And I was crying a little bit just because it was so cool and no one was back there. At the end of the day, I had quite a few blisters, but it was totally worth it for that experience in such a crowded park at such a peak tourist season.
Escape the crowds and get on the water in a beautiful, foldable Oru kayak. Learn more at www.orukayak.com. That's www.orukayak.com.
When I went to grad school, I did not know that I wanted to be a CEO. I always thought I would really love to be a partner to someone, Greg, the founder of Kamik, is a really great partner to me. I never wanted to work I don't like to think of us as being in retail, but the reality is we make physical products and we sell them. And I don't think we need to consume more things. And yet now I'm very practically in the business of selling hammocks and sleep systems and sleeping bags and tents. But it's been this phenomenal, almost reframing of the purpose of product and how product can enable so much in our life and unlock new experiences. And the mission of Kamik is aligned with my mission personally and what I connected to as an educator. I just now get to live out that mission through a different means, which currently for us is selling really high performance products that hopefully unlock incredible experiences for people. I don't know that I was actively pursuing this per se. I was actively showing up in places where I thought I could get connected to the outdoor industry and education and business. I mean, this job kind of fell serendipitously out of the sky. When I met someone who was connected as an investor in Kamik, we met in downtown Menlo Park for coffee for an entirely different reason. And 2 hours later, we were talking about the National Park Centennial and my time as a wilderness guide. And he walked me to my bike and I was strapping my helmet on. And he's like, I have one more question for you. And I'm like, yeah, shoot. He's like, do you happen to know anybody who would be interested in helping run an outdoor gear company? And we just looked at each other and I'm like, I might be interested. And so from that moment, I met Greg. I was back in Texas to stay with my family over Christmas. I did not want to move back to Texas. I did not want to run a business that sold stuff. Like, these were all things I was like, I'm not doing this. And after more conversation and time spent literally in a hammock calling every mentor I've ever had, I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this thing, because it is the thing that aligned a lot of my interests, but was the most unknown. And honestly, out of my couple options I was weighing at the time, it was the thing that scared me the most. And I say this in all humility, because I think I have often made the safe choice. You might look at my career and be like, wait, you quit like a high paying job to go live in the woods. But like, that felt in some ways less risky to me. Like, I think risk is relative to the person and what they value. And I think for me, like, moving to Austin and working from a portable building and being the fourth full-time employee to this small company, there were a lot of things about the job that I'm like, yeah, in theory, I know how to do it. I've just never actually done it. And so it was kind of scary. It's like, can I do this? Like, am I going to fail? But I said, you know what? I don't want to live my entire life only doing things that don't really scare or intimidate me. I had a little self-talk and I was like, you're going to show up. Like, you're going to show up and you might fail, but you're going to be better off for it. So I'm here.
You heard that too, right? Showing up and taking risks moves you forward.
So I've spent some time talking with women who started companies, but I haven't talked to many female CEOs, like within the outdoor industry specifically. It feels like it's a pretty small group.
I did a little research because I feel like the outdoor industry is pretty open to women leaders. Rose is a leader. Alyssa Ravasio at HipCamp is like leading the tech outdoor revolution. Roomap at Outdoor Afro. Kelly Water at Western Rise, like the two co-founders of Luminade. There are a lot of women. So I'm like, huh, I wonder like how that stacks up to other industries. So I actually found a really encouraging statistic that 22% of companies in the outdoor industry either have female CEOs or women on the like C-suite team, compared to less than 5% of, I think it's like Fortune 500 or Fortune 1000 companies. There's some really, really interesting research around, if you look at Fortune 500 companies, there's more Johns and Davids as CEOs than women. It's crazy.
Wow. So where did you find that statistic?
It was in an S News report on female CEOs from last April.
Oh, okay.
I think that there are more and more women in the workforce, but it's disproportionate in terms of women in position of leadership. And I think that's happening for a number of reasons. I think women opt out of the workforce a lot, and there are some structural reasons for that. I think there are cultural reasons for that. And I kind of have a weird reaction when I'm asked to do something and I feel like they're asking because I'm a woman versus my credibility or my potential for contribution. But I've had to reframe that a bit, because if I get asked to do something and they're asking as a woman, right, you should still show up because you got your foot in the door. And hopefully the second time they ask is for your contribution, and that you get to hopefully inspire and just start a ripple effect. I am so proud that now almost half of our team are women, and there was only one other woman when I started. And we have another CEO, and then we have another director on our team that's a woman, and there are four women on my team that are all such incredible, inspiring women, and there are five men on my team who I respect and admire. Diversity produces outcomes. When you bring diverse perspectives to the table, you're able to create more holistic and better solutions. And so there's a reason women should be on teams. They bring unique perspectives and abilities, just like any other type of like diversity profile. I think that the number one thing that women can do, especially women in leadership roles, no matter where you are, is to build up other women. I think we feel more threatened by other women sometimes than men. I don't know why that is, and I can't entirely put my finger on it, and I know it's a gross generalization, but I think that women need to build up other women. And my goal is to, the women on my team now are so much smarter than me in like so many different ways, and like not be afraid of bringing people to the table that, you know, might mean that you're not the best at one certain thing, or that somebody is going to shine brighter than you, because I think we need to just really build each other up and like believe that there is room for everybody to have contribution. Does that make sense?
It definitely does. I get a lot of emails from women who want to know how they can break into the outdoor industry. The outdoor industry is huge. It's a very big industry. There's a lot of different sectors within it. So it's hard to answer that kind of general question. But do you have any advice for women who are maybe just starting out in their career? They're not really sure what they want to do, but they know they want to work within the outdoor space.
Yeah. So it's not easy. When I was in San Francisco, I think I showed up at A-Light, Timbuktu. I like cold emailed a bunch of people from Patagonia. I looked on LinkedIn to be like, who knows who that knows who, though. It's like working on like supply chain at whatever company, so I can just have a talk about like, how do you get in? So I get the question, because it's hard. I think, okay, so start from where you are. Like, who do you know? Who can you talk to? if you literally don't know anyone, like what outdoor gear companies in your city host events? Where can you go to learn? So many of the jobs that I've gotten have been, I'm a huge believer in showing up. I think my advice to this question is to show up, do your research and show up to the places where you're interested. Because I got some of my best jobs by literally not applying online, not applying through, like, I went to speaking engagements or to workshops where the people facilitating had jobs I thought were cool or topics that were interesting. And then you linger and then you're like, hey, this one thing you said was really interesting. I'd love to know more. Can I buy you coffee? And I think it's just a matter of showing up, being curious, and you will surprise yourself at what doors will open. And ask questions, cold email people. I get not a ton of cold emails, but I get a lot of them. There's this one girl, Melissa. She sent me the most awesome cold email I've ever gotten. I was in an article in Outside Magazine, like 6 female CEOs to know or something. And she saw that and she emailed me a few paragraphs why she wanted to connect specifically with me. And like, here are 2 things I'd really love to learn from you. And she made it so easy for me to say yes and like reach a handout and be like, I'm going to call you on my way home from work. Let's talk about this because I hear you. And so don't be afraid to show up and ask and be curious and be specific. I mean, I think people are always really willing to help when you want to be specific. Don't be afraid to volunteer. I'm a firm believer that we now live in a world where the majority of jobs are going to be created through an intersection of need and skill and interest and not necessarily formal job descriptions. And so sometimes we have to show up enough to say like, hey, I see a need here. Can I fill it? Just raise your hand.
Going back to cold emailing, can you think of like the wrong way to cold email?
I would encourage if you're writing a cold email, take 2 minutes and pretend you are that person that you're emailing. When are they going to get this email? What might be on their mind? How might I be relevant to them? Like how might they say yes? If you just spend a minute channeling the person you want to talk to, you're going to write a better email. The worst emails are the one that's like, hey, sounds like you could be really helpful to my career. Can I get an hour of your time next week? And you're like, no, because when I get cold emails, I want to say yes as much as possible. But often I'm like, hey, help me help you. Share a little bit on where you're coming from. How can I uniquely be of support to you? And like, how can you make this convenient for me? And not that my time is more important than anyone else's, but if I don't know you from the next person on the street, and I only have 1 or 2 times a week where I actually take time during lunch to step away from the office, just being thoughtful of the other person goes such a long way. And so I think if you're presumptive or not specific, I think those are the worst. And I think if you flatter someone, if you've shown that you've done your research, if you show that you like have intent, and even better, if you're like, here's how I think I might be able to help you. Oh, one of my coworkers, Emily, she's awesome at this. She always says, hey, just taking a look at what you're doing. Like, I'm sure you've got a million things going on right now. I'd love to pick your brain for 30 minutes on this. And if you let me know what's keeping you up at night or what are your biggest issues, like I'll take a couple hours before we meet and brainstorm around some solutions for that. She'll give of her time before they ever give of their time, right? There's that reciprocity built into the ask, which I think is really powerful.
A lot of what you're talking about comes down to knowing yourself too, because in knowing yourself, then you know what you're interested in, and then you're able to figure out what questions, the right questions for you to ask and the right people to reach out to for you. But it takes some maturity in that way to reflect and figure out which direction to go in. And there is a bit of that gut that comes into play as well. Like you talked about not knowing why you're doing what you're doing, but kind of following that instinct and going from there.
Totally. When I was in grad school, there was an Outdoor Industry Women's Coalition event at Timbuktu. And it was one of those times I was like, I don't really want to go. It's rainy. I don't want to drive out to San Francisco. Like, I don't really know that I'm going to fit in. All these insecurity things. What am I going to say? Like, I don't know anybody. And I just went, and I was standing outside of the bathroom, and I just said hi to this woman. I'm like, who are you? And she's like, oh, I run this place. And it was Patty, the new CEO of Timbuktu.
And so we just started talking. And now I see her at OR and we stay in touch. Yeah, not being afraid to put your neck out for a relationship and risk rejection. We will all be rejected. This makes me think we should talk about dating. Just rejection is part of life. And sometimes somebody is going to say, hey, no, there's not an opportunity for you here. But I think the more that we can put ourselves out there and risk rejection, like, because you're going to get rejected. I've been rejected when I go to pitch Kamek so many times. But the more you can just realize that the right opportunity is going to click. And a no means that there is a yes somewhere else. If you can reframe rejection like that, then it makes showing up a little easier.
There you have it. You know how I said Haley reached me? I'd been on the fence about leading a panel at Five Point Film Festival in Colorado. I had all the reasons not to go. Fear of public speaking, the cost of a plane ticket, not feeling like I had the chops to interview filmmakers. But this conversation changed my doubts into a yes. I said yes to the fear and uncertainty, and last Sunday I led that panel. It certainly wasn't perfect. My voice was really shaky at the beginning, and I did feel a little bit out of my element. But I so enjoyed that festival in the little mountain town of Carbondale, Colorado. And I have Haley to thank for that. So thank you, Haley. You reached me. You can learn more about the company that Haley runs, Kamek, at www.kamok.com. If you enjoy this podcast, you'll probably like our site, she-explores.com. You can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Thanks to our sponsor, Oru Kayak.
Music in this episode is by Soft and Furious, Lee Rosevier, and Little Glass Man via the Free Music Archive. Until next week, bye.